We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And now, Chuck and Winkler. Two townies talking Wisconsin sports. Covering nothing but your favorite teams. Live from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios, this is Chuck and Winkler on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Chuck and Winkler on The Fan. That is Chuck Freeman. I'm Bart Winkler. We will talk with Mike Clemens next hour. Get an update at Packers training camp. I'm getting very excited about the Packers and think they could have a Super Bowl run. We'll see if Mike is seeing some good stuff at camp or some bad stuff. We'll talk some NBA Finals this hour. Chuck, you'll never believe who I would vote as Finals MVP right now.
Yes, I think he's probably on the team north of the border.
Nope.
Okay, we'll get to that.
He's not playing tonight, I can tell you that. Jerry Augustine, no need to wait for him anymore. St. Augie joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Longtime Brewer, Fox Sports Wisconsin superstar. St. Augie, what's up, man?
Hi, Augie.
Good morning, good morning. What a game last night for the Brewers to go extra innings. We've had a 13, we've had a 15, we've had an 18. We're playing a lot of extra inning ball games in the last month, but what a great game last night against a very, very good baseball team in the Houston Astros.
Yeah, and I think the summer's going to get going here, and they're going to have a great summer. I think they are. They're 10 games over the 500 mark. What needs the hap to happen for them to take that extra leap and to get 15, 20, 20 games over, finish with 90, 95 wins? Is that possible, Yogi? And if you think it's possible, what do these guys have to do on this team to get better?
Well, I think just play good, consistent baseball. I think when you look at what they have and you see with the way they played last night, playing against a good Houston Astros ball club like they did last night, they just did everything very well. They pitched very well. Both in the starting and in the bullpen is starting to come around. Everybody's trying to get settled down in the bullpen, and you see this bullpen pitching better and better as the season goes along. But offensively, they're starting to really swing the bat, and you're seeing guys starting to do much better. It'd be really nice to get guys like Travis Shaw and Jesus Aguilar going. I think would really help this ball club, but. I think one thing you see this club doing very well, and it's done it all year, is to play defense. Last night, they played excellent defense. Four double plays, some great plays by the outfield and the infield. And so when you just play good, sound, all-around baseball, and you got everybody swinging the bat pretty well, I think this team could be dangerous and take it a long way and start playing much better baseball.
Jerry Augustine, Fox Sports Wisconsin, joining us here, Chuck and Winkler on The Fan. The game last night, so the Brewers win 6-3, we know, against the Houston Astros. They are still in first place at 39-29. A very interesting game, and I think it's reflective of the way that baseball's kind of shifted over the last, you know, decade or so. 24 strikeouts for the Brewers, 19 within the 9 innings of regulation, we'll say. But then again, a bunch of solo home runs. Is that a disturbing trend for you in baseball, where it's pretty much become like all or nothing? I mean, strikeouts have doubled in the league over like the last 20 years. We're seeing solo shots or home runs. Is it happening enough to you, Augie, where it is a problem and it takes away some of the enjoyment out of the game, or is it just to you how the game's evolving?
Well, there's a guy by the name of Justin Verlander was on the mound. I think that has a lot to do with it. When you see the way he pitched last night, you know, you throw the ball very well, located very well, have your good stuff, especially your offensively, have your good breaking ball, you know, so things are going to go pretty well. But you look at what Justin Verlander did last night early in the ball game. Really, the Brewers did a nice job. They took advantage of his fastball up in the zone and hit some home runs. When you see what Ryan Braun came up, hit that first pitch fastball out of the ballpark, put the Brewers up, then Grandal got a ball in the middle plate, a little slider, but it was more in the middle plate. And then Eric Thames, again, a fastball up in his own out of the way and hit the ball for a home run. Those things do happen, but, you know, I don't, the 24 strikeouts or the 19 strikeouts or whatever you want to say, you got to give a lot of credit to Justin Verlander. He was really, really good last night, really commanding the fastball, and his breaking stuff was just excellent. He was low, he has that good power breaking ball he threw over the middle plate, then had that slider, which every time I saw him throw that good slider, it was in a great spot, tough to hit. So those games are going to happen. I think strikeouts do happen when you have great pitching and you go out there and you're throwing the ball very well and you have a guy like a Verlander out there. But I just think that's a part of the game, and it's a part of the game that I really enjoy watching, because you have those guys go out there and they command the strike zone and do their job, and you're seeing a guy here who's going to be a Hall of Famer and throwing the ball as well as he did last night.
Adrian Hauser continues to come out of the bullpen. I mean, you know, you look at his ERA, and it's very impressive, but it's like he's going out there and putting one good performance after another. Do you see him kind of being that third guy in that bullpen, that you know, filling that Knable role right now, the way he's been pitching?
Well, I think every year you need someone to step up and do something special. You know, like last year we saw the two guys. We saw Brandon Woodruff, and we saw Corbin Burnes go to the bullpen and really pitch well, and it was really instrumental in what the Brewers did last year. You always need someone to step up and do something special or learn something about someone new. And you know, and Adrian Hauser in spring training, he was throwing the ball very well. He has that good fastball and a good breaking ball, commanding it for strikes, using his changeup effectively, and came up and didn't throw very well against St. Louis in his first start and had struggled in another. But when they put him in the bullpen, his last 10 outings, what is he now? He's 2-0 in the last week. He's won two ball games. His last 10 outings, he's got sub-1 ERA. But you got to look at what he does. Doesn't walk a lot of guys, although last night the Brewers bullpen did walk unusually inordinate amount of guys. But what he does is he commands the strikes and goes after hitters. And now he's starting to pitch with confidence. So could he be Chuck? Could he be that? I think he could. I think he's the one guy that's going to really surprise some people in that bullpen, because he's throwing the ball so well right now.
Jerry Augustine on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Again, if you're looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935. I've been a guy, Augie, that's, you know, wanted more pitching on this team for ever since, I guess, my whole life. I think that they could use some, but you still do have a couple of guys in that rotation that have been very steady. Despite the patchwork of some of the back end of that rotation, you've had two guys in Brandon Woodruff and then Zach Davies. Woody pitching the way he is, Davies getting that control figured out. Is there a guy, I mean, if I made you pick who you're more impressed with, would you be able to do that? Because both of these guys have been very solid for the Brewers this year.
Well, they're both very good. I've been impressed with both of them. When you see the bounce back the way they have had last year, Woody came in and started at the beginning of the year and really struggled a little bit as a starter, then went to the bullpen. And I think what really happened with Brandon Woodruff, he really found himself in the bullpen. He found out that, you know, you got to command yourself. You got to be able to use your fastball. He's a power guy. But last night, I thought he took another step. The one thing we're seeing out of Brandon Woodruff in the last several starts, and is that young starter who's learning by education wise to learn how to throw the ball better, is he now has that ability to go back and pitch at a certain level. Like, he'll go out and he'll pitch 94, 95, and all of a sudden you're going to see 97, 98. Be able to go out and get that little extra. That's a sign of a guy who's understanding what he needs to do as a pitcher to be successful. And I thought he took a step last night, especially after the fourth inning where he struggled a little bit, made some bad pitches. He bounced right back, and he gave the Brewers three strong innings. I just think he's been throwing the ball so well, and he's, by confidence and by understanding how to throw the ball, when they use his good fastball and when they explode and when they reach back and get a little bit more, he's doing very well. But, you know, Zach Davies has just been so consistent. And, you know, his bounce back, he had a struggle here last year, but this year he's come back locating his pitches and just doing the things he has to do to get better. Last time out, so was struggling, just probably used had a struggle, had a battle through a game, started bringing out his breaking ball. Now you see him with his good fastball, his good that he locates very well, not overpowering, but locates. He's got the great changeup, and now using the breaking ball, he could be even better than he's been since the start of the season. He's been very good. So
I know,
those two guys are the staple of our starting staff, there's no question.
I think the people listening to the program this morning can tell that the level of expertise between myself when it comes to pitching and you is quite vast, nearly 10 years with the Brewers as a pitcher. And I've been saying, to go off the thing you said about Brandon Woodruff finding himself in the bullpen, I always assume that a guy that has to go from being a starter to the bullpen to being a starter again, I assume that that's bad for them, that they get out of the rhythm. But you're saying that that actually could be why Brandon Woodruff is so good. So sometimes that can help guys. I just, Augie, from afar, I always think, oh, no, you got to get these guys steady. But it could be the bullpen work that Woodruff did where he found himself.
It did, because he learned how, when you come out of the bullpen, especially the way those guys had to last year, to all the important parts that they came in. When you look at the run that the Brewers made in September and you look at what they did in the playoffs, Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff were very, very important. Woodruff was a guy who really stepped up and really threw the ball extremely well. And I think right then he kind of found himself and understood that, you know what, I have to locate the ball, and I have to understand that I just can't throw the ball and hope good things happen. I've got to have a good understanding that, you know what, when I locate the ball, I get ahead of hitters, and what I do is I keep the ball down, and then I can use that vast area up in the zone, which is very popular in pitching now, which is everybody uses. You can be successful. And Brandon Woodruff has got that understanding and throwing the ball very well, but I really like the way he kind of comes in now when he needs it, he reaches back, and all of a sudden you're watching him at 94, 95, 96, and boom, you'll see a 98, and last night we even saw 100. That's understanding when you really need it, you get a little bit of extra. That's pitching, and he's doing such a great job.
Augie, why is Yolish Chacin struggled so much? He's going to get another start on Monday. He's going to come back after a little lower back issue and was not good before that. What's been his issue, you see?
Not commanding his fastball. I think Yolish he's got the breaking ball. He can throw his breaking ball all the different slots. He's one of those guys where when you talk about throwing that slider, being able to change speeds and be able to locate in all these different spots, and you talk about the high slider being a successful pitch for guys, well, he's one of those guys who can do that. And this year he brought in the changeup, and he worked hard at that changeup, but just hasn't found that good way of going out and using those pitches. But I really believe it's the fastball. And I think last year when you saw him pitch, in the beginning of the year, he really struggled. I know we've talked about him being a slow starter. But, you talk about what he did last year. He went into Kansas City last year in a start. And in the first five innings or four innings of baseball, he threw like 28 to 35 pitches. And he was just dominating. And what was he dominating with? He was locating his fastball both inside and out, getting ahead, inducing ground balls, and throwing the ball very well. After that, he just seemed to take off because he was able to locate his fastball when he wanted to. And then he would use that slider and change speeds and locate it. And I think that's been the big difference in him so far this year, not being able to locate the fastball, not getting ahead with it when he needed to, or not being able to use it when he wanted to. That makes that changeup and that slider just that much better. So it's going to be interesting when he comes back that he comes back with the ability to really locate his fastball. And I think if you ever listen to him in his interviews, he says, everything comes off my fastball, even though my slider's my big pitch.
Augie, appreciate you being with us even after a late night last night. We will see you at the ballpark, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, the Blues are playing well. It's going to be fun. This trip out west is always a tough trip. And going out to San Francisco and San Diego next week is going to be interesting to watch this ball club. But they're playing very good, and it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's tough to stay up for, too, Augie.
It is. We call it late nights. But I'll tell you what, you start late, you get done early mornings. But as long as the Blues can go and play baseball, it'll be a lot of fun.
Just looking for a split net, six games out there. That's all I'm looking for, man. Let's get six games and come back.
I agree with you, Chuck. I agree. Just play 500 baseball when you go out west. It's always tough out there.
Yeah.
See you, Augie.
Thanks, Augie.
All right, guys. Take care.
Jerry Augustine, again, on the Great Midwest Bank hotline. So I may, Chuck, have to change the way I feel about pitchers going to the bullpen. Because if it worked for Brandon Woodruff, where he figured out how to use his fastball there, as Augie's saying, then maybe that is something that I should look more into. We'll see if Corbin Burns is able to do the same thing eventually, and then we're kind of seeing if Freddie Peralta can. But, hey, if I've got an opinion, and I talk to a guy who's done it for a decade, I'm going to listen to that guy who's done it for a decade, and that's why it's good to have Augie on.
Well, the deal is, if what's the best thing for the team is having Corbin Burns. If he's best as a reliever as opposed to being a starter, then whatever's best for the Brewers, I think. I mean, we're talking about trying to win a pennant here. Whatever is best going to help these guys, not only as individuals, but more importantly, the team. If Burns is better going to be a better bullpen guy, and while he works on things, then, that's where he should be. Woodruff, he's obviously earned his mark as a starter. He's not going anywhere in the rotation. Peralta, man, I guess I have a lot of questions about that guy.
Yeah, same. And so, we'll see. Is he getting another start? Did they announce that yet?
I don't think they have yet. But
I'm doing a really bad job of knowing who's starting when, because you've got Jimmy who, like, there's a week between starts, and then some other guys are on short rest, and then Shacine's coming back, and then Peralta might get another start.
Shacine is pitching, I know, next Monday. He's going to make his return to San Diego.
It's just all over the place.
Yeah. Well, who knows?
That's why when you have a guy like Woodruff that can go toe-to-toe with Verlander last night.
Oh, God, yeah. And he had to, because if he would have given up any more runs in that game, I didn't see the Brewers winning it. They put it that nice inning, that three-run inning, I think, in the fourth, and then the Brewers kind of, with the bullpen and him, he shut them down. But against Verlander, until Thames hit that home run, didn't look like they were going to score any more runs in that game.
Yeah, Eric Thames saved that game last night.
He did.
He's been playing well.
He did. He hit a homer off Verlander. Who saw that coming, man? They had a 3-2 lead in the seventh. I was like, man, they're going to turn it over to the bullpen here sooner. And then what I like, though, they took Verlander out after seven. And anytime they take out an ace pitcher, you always get like a sigh of relief. It's like, oh, that guy's out of the game. But could they score any more runs against that pretty good bullpen of the Astros?
If you were on a desert island and could only live and hear one song for the rest of your life,
yeah,
would it be this one?
No, it might be the Chuck and Winkler theme song.
Oh, would it be that one?
Yeah.
Would it be Dick and Waukesha?
Yeah. That's the name of our team, and they will win. With an effort supreme, because they broadcast the professional way, and that's why we love Chuck and Buck.
Yeah, yeah. I without you singing, it would be great. I would probably want to be stranded on that so I could realize that I was once, I had a little thing going here for a little bit.
It's Chuck and Bart, the professional team. We are on the Fan. We'll talk some NBA Finals coming up, what we expect tonight. And I'm going to make the case for Kevin Durant as the Finals MVP. You ready for that one?
He's the difference maker.
You think that my takes have been off the deep end before. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. I'm going for it. I'm diving headfirst into this one. Chuck and Winkler on the Fan.
Chuck and Bud. That's the name of our team, and they will win with an effort supreme, because they broadcast the professional way, and that's why we love Chuck and Bud.
And put his body on the line in a must-win game.
That's Aaron Rodgers talking Kevin Durant. NBA Finals Game 6 tonight. I'm Bart Winkler. That is Chuck Freeman from the Bryant and Stratton College Athletic Studios. Freems, let me give you some stats statistically side by side, okay? Would you rather have a guy in the finals who is shooting 43% from the field or 60%?
60%, okay. Of course.
Would you rather have a guy shooting 37% from three or 100%?
100%, of course.
And how about at the free throw line, 89% or 100%?
100%.
Yeah, so Kevin Durant's got those 100%. He should be your MVP of the finals.
Okay.
You go with me?
He didn't play in all seven games, though, did he?
If the Warriors do win this series, and this is just how you view most valuable versus best player, if the Warriors win this series, I would absolutely vote for Kevin Durant to be the MVP. Because without him, they were lost. And then the 11 minutes that he gave them changed everything. I mean, that's what Draymond Green's saying at the practice yesterday.
You know, we all understand his love for the game of basketball, for him to get back out there. And as crazy as it sounds, I think he played 11 minutes. I think those 11 minutes were enough to give us the spark that we needed. Now we want to continue to try to build on that and, you know, do everything that we can to finish the series the right way.
I would have also given the MVP award to Aaron Rodgers the year he got hurt, and I would have given it to Peyton Manning the year the Colts went 2-14 without him.
Well, you could have given LeBron the MVP a few years ago when Iguodala won the MVP, the finals MVP. That could have went to LeBron that series, man. He was averaging 35 points a game, about 15 boards a game. You know, but a losing team never gets the MVP unless you're playing the Brewers in the 82 L's. You know, the Brewers, when they won the American League pennant in 82, the American League Championship Series, they gave the MVP to the losing team's player, Freddie Lynn, so, which was ridiculous. You never see that happen. Okay, I don't remember it ever happening since, but I don't think I think the MVP is still to be determined.
It happened once in the Super Bowl.
It did?
Yeah.
What do you got?
I'm trying to remember the card. Was it Harvey Martin? Randy White? Who won Super Bowl 12? Off the top of your head. Hey, off the top of your head, Chuck, who won Super Bowl 12?
Dallas playing Denver?
Dallas beat Denver. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Dreams.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't need to Google. Dallas beat Denver. That was the year Denver's defense was called the Orange Crush. They had a quarterback by the name of, what was that, Harbat?
Chuck Ollie?
No. Dallas won the Super Bowl. Denver had this awesome defense, the Orange Crush defense, but they had a quarterback by the name of Craig Morton. But Dallas won with a guy named Roger Staubach.
It was Chuck Howley.
Chuck Howley was the
MVP. As Horvat said.
Okay.
Who won the MVP. Super Bowl V, the Cowboys lost 16-13, and Chuck Howley won the MVP.
Okay, because you said Super Bowl XII, which would have been the winning team, had the MVP. Who was the – I was 10.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who was the team that had the MVP.
So why did they give him the MVP?
I don't know.
I'm just saying. Are you looking at it? Did it say why he won the MVP? Is he? I don't even know who the guy is.
I don't know. He's on defense.
Yeah,
he
never heard
the
of
MVP.
Him. But when the Brewers, you remember the 1982 Brewers? You ever hear about them?
I was not born.
No, but I mean the 82 Brewers, who we always talk about, or people always refer back to. They beat California in the playoffs, 3-2, to go to the World Series, and there's an MVP for the ALCS. And they gave it to Freddie Lynn because he batted like 560 in the series. It's like, how do you give it to the losing team when the winning team should have the MVP? Could you give the MVP to the losing team here?
Well, yeah, if the Warriors win this, I mean, if the Raptors win the finals, Kawhi gets the MVP. But if the Warriors win, I mean, depending on how they win, it could still be Kawhi. You look at who is the most valuable player in that series. Now, that award over time has become who's the best player. I think the valuable part of it, which I cling to, because if that's the award, that should be the award. If it's most valuable, it should be who's the most valuable to your team. And if it's a guy that gets hurt and misses the entire season, your team goes 2-14 like the Colts, then it should be Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a guy that the whole series, the tone of the series, if the Warriors win 3 in a row and they were boosted by 11 minutes from Kevin Durant, I think that shows you he was the most valuable player in that series. So I would absolutely vote for Kevin Durant. Now, I would be the only one, but I go by the letter of the law when it comes to what MVP means. So, yes, I would vote for Kevin Durant.
See, I think the MVP for the Warriors.
Now, it'll probably be Steph.
Well, if they win. I think we don't know yet. I think if the Warriors win these next two games, Bart, Thursday and Sunday, whoever leads them to the victories in both of those games, that guy will be the MVP. Let's say out of nowhere, Iguodala starts hitting shots out of his ass, and he's, you know, but I would think it's going to be Curry or Klay Thompson. Let's say
Klay
has two
game
big performances.
Six Klay tonight. I'm expecting another game six performance from Klay.
Let's say he has two big performances. He could be the MVP, but I think right now, if Toronto won tonight, it's going to be Kawhi, although I think Golden State is going to win. But Golden State's MVP, depending on who is the leader here in the next couple of nights.
The Warriors have been in this spot before, to Kevin Durant's Thunder. They were down 3-1 in a series, and that game six of that series, Klay Thompson went off. Game sixes were built for Klay Thompson, and I'm thinking that he is a good night tonight. I'm thinking Steph Curry is a good night tonight. I've been trying to find what people think of this game tonight because it could go a ton of different ways. I saw one prediction that the Warriors are going to come out just awesome and then just run out of gas, and Toronto will eventually win the series tonight. I almost feel like if I had to bet my life on it, I might take Toronto tonight.
You know what? I feel the opposite. I feel like Toronto, I think Golden State's going to come out like gangbusters, and I can see Golden State putting the Raptors away, much like the Raptors put the Bucks away in Game 4 and won by 20 points. I could see that. I could see Golden State just letting it all hang out and rolling, and then Game 7 back in Toronto, the Raptors winning. I'm taking Golden State tonight. I think they're going to a Game 7.
I mean, the non Kevin Durant game, so every other game, Toronto has just...
I know.
They've dominated Golden State.
I know.
Golden State hasn't really had an answer for them.
Well, except for Game 2. Game 2. Golden State beat Toronto at Toronto when they played a little bit better defense, and they won that game.
Yeah, they had a big night out of Boogie Cousins.
Yeah.
And then Boogie, you know, died again in Game 3.
he went 1-for-7 or whatever
it was. He sort of resurrected in Game 5.
So you think Toronto's going to win tonight?
I kind of feel like it.
And they're going to close it up by winning 3 times at Oracle? Wow.
The Raptors won 2 out of 3 in Toronto.
Yeah. Golden State won 2 out of 3 in Toronto. Right?
What did I say, the Raptors?
Yeah.
Golden State. You know what I meant.
No, I didn't. I didn't know. Golden State won 2 of 3. So I could see Golden State winning. I don't see the Raptors winning 3 times at Oracle. I don't see that happening. I see Golden State part winning by a landslide tonight. And I'm telling you, I think Steph Curry's going to come out and have a big night. I could see Game 6 Klay having a big night, getting some decent performances.
Every time I think the Warriors are going to win, you think the Raptors. And then every time I think the Raptors are going to win, you think the Warriors.
I just think Golden State's going to win tonight. No big deal. I think Golden State's going to win. I think they're going to win. But I've been right most of the series so far.
I know. I've been wrong.
I've been right most of the series.
I know. I've been wrong a lot of the series, and you're profiting off me.
Yeah. Yes. But I think your boys are going to win tonight. Forcing a Game 7. I still think Toronto's going to win the Game 7, but I think tonight might be a blowout.
What do you got on the spread? What is it?
We looked it up a little while ago. I thought it was 3.5.
For favor Golden State?
Yeah, I think your guys are ahead.
2?
Yeah, I think it was 3.5 or so. Moving towards Toronto. Let's see what scores and odds. Oh, it's down to 2.5. Golden State's favored by 2.5. Okay.
Like, if your life was on the line, who do you bet?
I would not go on Toronto tonight. I would not go on Toronto. I just think Golden State's due to crush somebody.
Well, I've thought that the whole series hasn't happened.
I think Golden State's due to crush somebody. I think tonight's the night.
I mean, if Kevin Durant was still healthy, this series would be over.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you hear about people say, well, Toronto won at Golden State when the Warriors had their full complement of guys, but I think it would at least go to a Game 7. They would have won the other night, obviously. Tonight, and I think it would at least go to a Game 7. It would be, I mean, it's going to be tough going into that barn on Sunday night and winning at Toronto. I'm telling you, they have a hell of a home court advantage there. It's tough to win there. I could see, especially for the postseason here, when that crowd gets going, it's going to be very difficult for the Warriors to win there.
Your lasting image of this series to me, depending on how it plays out, I think this will be forever remembered as the Kevin Durant got injured series. Steve Kerr feels terrible. The team feels terrible. The general manager said he took some responsibility the other night. Steve Kerr yesterday.
It's devastating, mostly for Kevin, obviously. But you know, I feel horribly for Rick as well, Celebrini, who is one of the best people I've ever been around and one of the smartest, brightest minds that I've ever been around. He's devastated the team. We all are. But we made the decision collaboratively with all the information that we had, and we thought it was the right one.
Who's Rick Scalabrine? The trainer, the doctor? Is that who he's referring to there? Must be.
He said it during the thing who he was.
Must be.
For Rick as well, Celebrini, who is one of the best people I've ever been around, and one of the smartest, brightest minds that I've ever been around.
Maybe not.
Yeah, no, he did. That's why I asked.
Do you want to hear from Wanda Durant?
Yeah, I heard she's been very active on Twitter.
She says the doctors share responsibility.
What I will say is that, you know, the doctors said that he was okay. Kevin couldn't have gone on his own to say, I'm going to play.
True.
Without the advisement of the doctors. And so they said that he was okay. And so, you know.
Yeah, he's a man.
Responsibility for him playing.
Are we going to see KD? So far we've seen KD on Instagram say, I love basketball. I wanted to compete. Are we going to see him pull a Marty Bennett in a couple of weeks where he blames the doctors for making him play?
I don't know. But I think everybody, at the end of the day, he has the decision whether he wants to play. The trainers and the GM, I think they probably have to okay it too. But, McCarthy always said, Mike McCarthy, the former Packer coach, when asked if a guy is going to play, he always says, well, I have to check with the medical staff. It's not up to me. It's up to the medical staff to say whether or not a guy can play or not.
Well, the medical staff said, KD, we clear you. He could have still said, I'm not ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like they threw him out there.
No, that's what I said. I said, KD, at the end of the day, makes the final decision on that. I mean, medical staff can say, hey, Bart, you're okay to work Friday morning despite your sore throat. And you can say, oh, no, that's fine. I'm gonna come in anyway. And then you get laryngitis and you're out for an extended period of time. Well, you made the decision to come in despite doctors telling you to take another day off.
It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. Kids eat free Saturday after 4 o'clock. Kids eat free Tuesdays and Saturdays. Take your kid out to Perkins. Break up the weekend a little bit. Get out of the house. I know the weather hasn't been fantastic. If you guys love summer, I love this crap weather.
God, I hate it.
Loving it.
I'm driving in today and it looks like fall. It does.
I love it.
I hate it.
I love spring. I love fall and I hate summer. And I'm in heaven.
Now, do you hate summer because you like to watch TV and be in the house? You feel guilty being on your couch when it's nice outside?
Part of it. I also sweat as soon as it hits 68 degrees.
Yeah.
I start sweating profusely.
I mean, we're mid-June here, and we have had very little taste of summer at all.
I know. It's beautiful.
And
I can give
sucks.
You a little bit of taste of summer with the Strawberry Festival at Perkins, so you can have some fresh strawberries thrown on top of a salad with the crisp garden greens and the glazed walnuts and the feta cheese. That's available at Perkins, the fresh strawberry salad. You can get strawberries all over your breakfast items, the fresh strawberry croissant French toast, the fresh strawberry buttermilk pancake platters. It's available at Perkins all throughout southeast Wisconsin. Chuck and Winkler will get another update from Green Bay next on The Fan.
There's a lot of sloppiness that we have to clean up moving forward.
Packers left tackle David Bakhtiari says learning LaFleur's new ways to block defenders takes time.
At the end of the day, it's a philosophy. It's an understanding. There's certain things that are the same, but at the end of the day, the foundation's different. The ideology of what we're trying to accomplish as an offense and to show to the defenses is different.
The defense seems to have the upper hand. I asked Blake Martinez if inside linebacker Oren Burks has shown improvement in his second year.
No, yeah, 100%. I mean, I think Oren's made the biggest improvement out of anyone I've seen. And it's just been awesome to see, and I think it's just going to keep growing from there. And once we get pads on, those plays will come reality in that aspect. It's not going to be projected anymore, and I think he'll show up.
For more team coverage, go to 1057fmthefan.com.
Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. I'm Bart, that's Chuck. Mike Clemens to join us live at 9:15. Ryan Horvath producing this operation. He's here as well. And you guys, 414-799-1250, including this gentleman by the name of Mark in Wind Lake. Mark, what's on the top of your mind today, bud?
Hi, Mark.
Hi. You guys are talking about, like, the scoring, the three-point plays in basketball, the home runs in baseball, the long ball in football. You know, I think that if they didn't have the three-point line, you know, you'd see the guys driving the lane and slamming it like Giannis. Now, that's exciting.
Oh, yeah, the three-point. But Giannis can still drive the lane. I mean, the three-point line.
Right. But if they didn't have the three-point line, it was just, you know, 2 points for any shot. You bring Lopez down in there maybe, you know, I don't know about that. But Giannis would be a monster.
Yeah, one of the things we're talking about was kind of like in baseball. You saw 24 strikeouts last night with the Brewers, and then you saw a bunch of solo home runs. So it has become a situation where it's kind of all or nothing, and that's similar to basketball, where it's become dunks or three, and nobody shoots the mid-range anymore. Would you prefer if there was no three-point line?
Yeah, well, I think Giannis would for sure be MVP then. Anyway, in baseball, the launch angle, you know, they're all working on the launch angle, trying to hit that home run. You know, that's what they're, you know, and when somebody hits a double or a single to the opposite field where nobody's, you know, like they got the shift on and nobody's there, I just love that.
Oh, I do too. I like when a guy lays down a bunt down the third base line when there's nobody over there because they got that stupid shift on. I mean, you know, I mean, because how are major leaguers? They don't have bad. Now, Council says the other way, right? Because I also, you know, how do major leaguers not do this? He says it's not as easy as it looks. So I don't know.
Mark, thanks for the call. 799-1250.
You would think that if there's a shift on, you'd be able to lay a little bunt down the third base line and easily beat it out. I mean, you got nobody over there.
We try to put on a good show for you guys every day. You know, we try to talk about what you're talking about. I think today the show outside of the show is taking precedence. I think because there's so much to bet on and we keep talking about it during the breaks, we might as well just talk about it on the show.
I haven't talked much about it.
We got the golf to bet on.
Yeah.
We got the NBA Finals to bet on.
All right.
We got the World Cup to bet on if you're like Horvat and me. Mm-hmm. We've got, you know, baseball to bet on.
The Twins, yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could bet on the U.S. Open that's coming up. Who's going to win it? Some very good odds out there, too.
There are. There are really good odds out there. Who do you guys like this weekend?
I think, if anything, I'd go with either Koepka or Johnson to win it. I would think Johnson's the favorite. I don't think Tiger's going to win it. But whoever's... I think Dustin. I mean, you got to keep the ball in the fairway at Pebble Beach. And that's why I think one of those two guys are going to do it.
So if Koepka wins, this would be his third U.S. Open, right?
In a row, yeah.
In a row?
Yeah, how about that?
I guess I like him. I mean, do you like Tiger in this?
I mean, it all started right here, him winning the majors. He came out of nowhere to win this one. And, you know, he's been on a roll ever since. Woods, I don't know. Did he get his one major? And that's it?
A $100 bet wins you $1,100 if Tiger does win.
He's plus 1,100?
Yeah, that's the odds. I
like Brett McIlroy today, coming off winning the Canadian Open. You know, Koepka last week at the Canadian Open, he was 50th.
Right.
I mean, he plays really, really poorly. So I would like either McIlroy. I mean, I like the heavy favorites here. I like McIlroy, maybe Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or Koepka.
Me and a guy I know, we placed a couple little wagers. I have Rory. I got him at plus 820. So I just threw down $20 to win 164.
Good odds.
Dustin Johnson, I got him at plus 860.
That's great, too.
So a $20 bet even wouldn't you 172 there. And then Patrick Cantlay I got as well, and that was plus 1,800. I like him as kind of like my outside.
He won the Memorial a couple of weeks ago.
$20 bet will win you 360. And then Phil Mickelson, just to make the cut, not that these odds are great, but minus 210, just to make the cut, not to be in the top 10, anything like that. I like that as well. I think Phil is, I think he finishes at least top 25 here. He's never won this one. I think that he's at least going to be in contention.
See, the odds are so good there for Mickelson. I mean, it looks like it's a sucker bet, but Mickelson,
he's 50-1 to win the tournament. Isn't he?
Yeah, but he's not. He's like last in golf as far as hitting the ball in the fairway on drives. So I think that's the reason why. And on this course, you got to Pebble Beach. You got to hit it in the fairway, as most courses, but especially this one.
I've got the favorites as Koepka 8-1, DJ 9-1, and Rory, Tiger 12-1, Spieth, Cantlay 18-1.
Maybe Spieth. Good odds there.
He has not won in a while, has he?
He's like struggled. I mean, remember a few years ago, 2015, he was like considered one of the best putters ever.
Yeah, he was like the next Tiger Woods as far as like they thought marketability. That's the thing about golf right now, man, is everybody's so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, historically, like if you watched golf like 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was like the same 3-4 guys in contention. Now you look at these odds and you're like, man, I could see like 30 of these guys winning this tournament. Yeah.
Oh, they're so, I mean, all the guys you mentioned today, all very, very
good. And then
capable.
Even guys that we don't even know about, like, that's the crazy thing about these tournaments. Somebody could just sneak up, you know, and be in contention on Sunday.
Sure. Well, 15 years ago, it was Phil or Tiger.
Mm-hmm.
Phil or Tiger. you know, Furyk had his run before, Duvall had his run about 20 years ago before he fell off the map. But he was very good too.
And that was the thing, like these prodigies, like they would come up every once in a while and we'd get all excited. And then Tiger, it was almost like LeBron James, and then Tiger would just get rid of him. We'd never hear from him again. Like I was a big Justin Leonard guy, mainly because he got to ride the court for 18 or the cart for 18 holes. I was like, man, I think he's finally going to win a major.
But who was that one guy, that was in the playoff with him? Rocco Media.
Yeah.
Old it's guy. Like, there's always like a challenger. Yeah. It's like, when John Cena's got a title run, there's always like a challenger of the month.
Rocco Media.
And then he buries.
Yeah. That was like 1986 when he was in his heyday. he was always at the Greater Milwaukee Open. Rocco Media. You'd always count on him to be at the Greater Milwaukee Open. Another guy I think is Tony Finau. How about him?
Yeah.
Where is he? Do you have any odds on him?
Yeah, I think he was down around, I got it right here.
30-1
that
maybe.
That might be a nice long shot bet for you, Harvey.
Yeah, maybe like Finau's
40-1.
Although when I look at Finau, when I see Finau, I see Jabari Parker all the time.
He looks just like him.
I mean, I see him, and I the first thing I think of Parker.
Well, they're second cousins.
And then I start thinking about the Bucks.
But he look.
And then I start thinking about the Bucks' failure against Toronto. And then it starts all over again.
I think if they brought back Jabari, they'd have somebody to actually get him a bucket when they're giving up a 25-2
we
run.
Can't say that.
Yeah, see. Watching Tony Finau gets me back to thinking about the Bucks, and then I feel bad about myself.
We can't talk about that, Horvat.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't talk about what this team could have done with Parker. Yeah. Don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Not for a second. I do like that it will be in prime time.
Yeah, golf is going to be going on until like 9-10 o'clock at night.
And I don't know why I said it like prime time. That was odd. Prime time.
Well, 2015, Green Bay. When it was out in the West Coast before, it went till 9-10 o'clock at night, which was cool.
That's why I love Top Golf. It's always been my dream. Just to play golf at night, like everything lighted, just 18 holes. You tee off at like 8 p.m. I always just thought that'd be cool. Like I love going at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. and getting a strong buzz before noon. Like that's always my favorite part. You get back home and, you know, my wife's always like, hey, I thought you were only going to have like two or three beers. And you're like 15 deep. And you're like, oh, let's go out.
See, but, for me, I can't drink on the course. It's tough enough to golf, drink a Diet Mountain Dew.
You're too competitive. That's why.
Well, I mean,
I'm out there to have fun.
Well, you're a competitive guy.
No, I am, but see, that's why I don't like golf. Like, I like sports that I could dominate, even at bags. Like, I like sports that I'm going to win at. And golf, I play with, like, all my buddies, they play, like, every single day. They don't have real jobs, so they go out there on the course, like, every single day. So, they're so good. We play for money. Like, that's the thing. I get so frustrated by, like, the sixth hole, seventh hole, that I can't even enjoy myself and just have a few beers because I'm getting trounced.
You know, there's a Topgolf that's coming in Milwaukee here. It's going to Pato. That's a bad combination right there.
No, it's two Dangerous. Sims. It's not like what you think it is.
It's a simulator.
Yeah, it's not like the Topgolf that
it's like the one that's going to Lambeau Field.
It's like we can't go all out and do it. Yeah. We'll just get half we'll appease you with a little bit of it.
Yeah. Why not?
I don't know.
I mean, Topgolf, we were at that in Denver, and it was, I mean, it's two and a half hour wait just to get a spot on a Sunday afternoon.
It's Chuck and Winkler, served up by Perkins Restaurant and Bakeries. More on everything that you can lay some bread down on this weekend. Is that what people say? Some cheese?
None of my friends.
Me either.
Oh, okay. Some entertainment points.
There you go.
We'll say that. We'll talk some Packers as well. Mike Clemens joining us. It's Chuck and Winkler here on The Fan.
Coming up today at 2.
Mike Moustakis does.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.